Dr. Paul, welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. My guest today, what an amazing surprise, Dr. Kevin Stillwagon. He's been a Delta pilot for decades. He's a chiropractor by background and an immune system expert. What we cover is, first of all, his experience with the FAA, how he had to retire early in 2020, but then he also addresses, well, what should the FAA be doing to keep us all safe? But most importantly, this was perhaps the best interview I've ever had or seen on our immune systems. He just brings it down to everyday person language that we can understand what our immune system is, how it functions to keep us safe, and how that's so important, especially in the given a novel virus like this SARS-CoV-2. I mean, you get the right things going on for your immune system, folks, and it's no big deal. So this is an important one. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. What's on my heart to share today is the topic of informed consent. This topic has been the almost complete essence of what I've tried to do as a physician, as a pediatrician, and as a freedom fighter, somebody who wants you, the parents, to have the right to decide what is done to your child. This is something that we've done in medicine since the beginning of time, anytime we're looking at a procedure. Whether it's an elective procedure, I mean, the only exception would be a total emergency. You've been in a car accident or you've got severe appendicitis and you are gonna die almost. You know, you get consent later because you're saving their life. But in 99.9% of decisions that are made in medicine, it's not that kind of an emergency. You, the parents, should be given informed consent about whether or not you choose. In this case, let's talk about vaccines. And let's actually talk about the COVID jab, this new technology, mRNA technology. Are you getting true informed consent? This means someone giving you true informed consent, which is your right, needs to tell you the risks, the benefits, and the alternatives. Let me start first with the alternatives. One alternative always has to be that you have the right to say no to the proposed medical treatment. If you're not having the right to say no, I would urge you to leave. Just walk out. They cannot strap you down and force you to take a vaccine or a shot. It is simply not yet at that point in this country, the United States of America. We hope it never gets to that point. So you always have the right to leave. But how about the pros and the cons, the benefits and the risks? Unfortunately, what tends to happen in medical offices around the country is you're given a narrative of vaccines are safe and effective. Period. That's sort of the end of the discussion. Well, I want to share with you a couple resources. We're going to post these on our page at doctorsinscience.com. These are important things to consider if you're truly being given informed consent around the COVID vaccine. So from the Children's Health Defense, here's what they say. And they say, read these carefully so you can make an informed decision for the children in your life. Did you know there are no long-term safety data for COVID-19 vaccinations in children? Did you know that children have a 99.995% recovery rate? Did you know that COVID vaccines do not prevent transmission, nor do they prevent infection? Did you know that most children are already immune? I can speak to that. I've been in the trenches for the entire time, and lately I ask every family now, have you had COVID in your family? Almost every single time the answer is yes, and everybody did fine. So there is no longer a need for this vaccine since natural immunity is more robust and lasting anyway, better than the vaccine, that's known. Did you know that unnecessary vaccination will put children at elevated risk of vaccine harm? And finally, did you know that multiple studies have suggested that vaccinating after infection increases the risk of vaccine-induced side effects, such as myocarditis? Folks, we are now at a point where we have enough data and enough information to know that the vaccine, if you want to call it that, is far riskier than having the natural infection, which most kids have already had. So what's the point of putting in a jab for a strain, the Wuhan strain, but even if they came up with a new strain, they're chasing their tails. So one other one, I won't go through all the questions, but I want you to know this will be on our website, doctorsandscience.com. We're gonna call this the TIC, Truly Informed Consent for Kids, in gratitude to Diane Perlman who put this together. Yes or no? I agree to allow my child to receive the mRNA injection knowing that there is no long-term safety data, meaning that he or she will be participating in a medical experiment, which requires fully informed consent according to the Nuremberg Code. Next, I'm only going to do a couple of these. Yes or no, I am informed that the FDA and the CDC approved the mRNA injections based on an emergency use authorization, even though there is no emergency for children. There's about 19 of these questions. They just hit you right at the point where, how come we're not being asked these questions? How come we're not being told that this is a real issue? Folks, as a pediatrician, as a dad, as one who feels like I stand in the gap for children, this is of utmost importance. So take a copy of this, get it from our website, walk into your doctor if you are actually thinking about injecting this experimental mRNA technology into your baby or your child, and have them go through those questions and see what they say. If they don't have information and knowledge, they cannot give you informed consent. So you need to find another doctor. I hope this information will be helpful to you. It's on my heart that every child in America should be protected by their parents, because certainly we now know that public health, CDC, NIH, and all the government and news agencies seem to be captured in a whole narrative that's not paying attention to the data. I'm Dr. Paul. Welcome, Dr. Kevin Stillwagon. It is such a pleasure to have you on Against the Wind. You have a very interesting history, and I'll let you elaborate, but you've been a Delta pilot for many, many years, a chiropractor. You've really educated yourself on the immune system, really become expert in that area. I think, if I remember correctly, you've never had a vaccine. Is that true?
That's true, Dr. Wow. Paul, and I'm still alive. I'll be 65 in a few weeks. I can still run 10 miles. I don't have a single pain in a joint in my body. I feel fantastic. And wow. I'm sure there's other people like me. And I commend you, Dr. Paul, for what you did with the vax nurses versus non-vax study in children. And I think it can be pushed out even as far into adults and do a little more digging.
Yeah,
and see what we've ended up with.
You're absolutely right. The controlgroup.org is a very well done survey, vaxxed, unvaxxed, that includes mostly adults.
Right.
Mind-boggling how the unvaxxed are so healthy, not suffering from chronic disease, you name it. If you're unvaxxed, you're just healthier. So I didn't grow up with that as my foundation, because I went to Dartmouth Medical School, traditional medical training, where we were just taught the wonders of vaccines. We were never taught about their ingredients or any side effects. And of course, the whole system has gone that way. You self-published a book in 1984 on medical freedom. That just that blows my mind. You were way ahead of your time.
Yeah, well, you know, I was talking about how our freedoms could be taken away by medical mandates. And, you know, they started that with children, with mandating certain shots for children to get into the public school system. And there was always a way around that, Dr. Paul, with a religious exemption that people could get. And of course, that's what my parents got for me. And that's what I got for my daughter, and had absolutely no problem getting her through the public school system 25 years ago. I think we started 26 years ago, started putting her into the public school system. And not a lot of people realize that you can still do that. But there have been several states, about five of them. I can't remember all of them offhand, but I know California and New York are two.
Mississippi, West Virginia, and what's the fifth?
Yeah, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. People have voluntarily given away their right for a religious exemption. And these types of things are very dangerous because it could ruin society as we know it. And I also talk about in my book how the way they try to gain control is to capture the minds of children. And I see that happening right now, Dr. Paul, with what they've done with the masking and trying to convince children that they are a threat to other people.
Yeah, to grandma.
Yeah, that they could kill grandma. I mean, this is just absolute insanity. And if we continue down this road, we're going to actually ruin society as we know it. And we have to educate people on how the immune system actually works, what's really going on. We have to eliminate the fear, Dr. Paul. Most people are deathly afraid of viruses.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely no reason for that, because a virus is not even a living thing. It's just a package of genetic material inside of a shell that's made of proteins and fats. It's not alive. It has no intelligence, nor the desire to attack you. And because it's not alive, it can be made in a laboratory. You know, we cannot make life, but we can make these virus particles. And Fauci has been funding this type of research for decades.
Right.
And this is where some of the fear comes in, Dr. Paul, because they've convinced people that if you come in contact with one of these virus particles, that it can literally drop you dead. And that's not how the body works. Your body was actually designed to keep these virus particles out of you, whether they're man-made or not. We have the natural built-in mechanism to stop that from happening. Now, some people are going to have severely depressed immune systems. And these people are going to have problems when they contact a virus particle. But it's always been that way, Dr. Paul. Even the common cold or the flu, some of these people that contact these viruses will develop complications because of their weak immune system, and eventually they will succumb to their illness. But it's not the virus that killed them. It's the complications resulting from how their body is dealing with the virus. I like to say this, Dr. Paul, I know you're going to get this, but most people don't get it. Viruses are always contagious. They always transmit between humans. That's what they do. It's been like that for millennia. Whether you wear a mask or not, it's estimated that we all breathe about 100 million various viruses every single day, whether you wear a mask or not. So the viruses are contagious, but the symptoms of contacting a virus are not necessarily contagious, because the only people that will develop these symptoms are people that have immunosuppression. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. The interesting phenomenon that makes scientific sense, we've got plenty of articles talking about it, is the fact that when we vaccinate aggressively, as the childhood schedule has been more and more aggressive over the last three decades, we're actually shifting the immune system, and maybe you can address this because I know you really love the immune system. Shifts it towards allergy and autoimmunity and away from its innate immunity. So perhaps comment on that, and then talk a little bit about the innate immune system, because I know it's most robust in young children, which is partly why they've had no problem with COVID.
Right. Absolutely no problem with COVID. Have you ever noticed how snotty little kids are, how mucusy they are, just loaded with mucus. And parents want to dry that mucus up. That's not what you want to do. That mucus is there as a protective mechanism. Those virus particles that we just talked about that are not even living things, in order for them to affect you or do anything at all, they have to get through that mucosal lining. That's a very difficult thing for a virus particle to do, especially in people that have very robust immune systems, and children fall into that category. In fact, some people will never ever succumb to a flu-like illness because their mucosal barrier is so robust and so strong. Now, the innate immune system that we want to talk about, that's what you're born with. And this works without even involving antibodies. There are three very specialized sentinel cells that guard the barrier that exists between the outside of you and the inside of you. So in order for a virus to affect you, again, it's got to get on the inside of you. And so these sentinel cells that are guarding that epithelial barrier, I like to call it a fence, these sentinel cells actually have the ability to see virus particles inside of the cells that make the fence. Antibodies cannot do that. Antibodies can only see the virus or parts of the virus when it is already inside the body. So we'll talk about these three sentinel cells that are fascinating to talk about. The first one is called a natural killer cell, and kids have natural killer cell robustness that is just beyond belief. These natural killer cells, they don't even care, Dr. Paul, what the virus is. It could be SARS, MERS, Ebola, really scary things. They don't care what that virus is. If they detect that the virus is on the inside of one of these cells that guard that epithelium, that make up the epithelium, they will actually destroy the cell itself. And by doing so, the virus that is on the inside will be destroyed as well. That's called protection of infection. So the virus never gets to replicate and it never gets distributed inside of the body. Now, how does it do that? Well, there's a very complicated system called major histocompatibility complexes, or MHCs, that these cells will normally display. But when a virus is inside of the cell, that MHC complex disappears. And the natural killer cell can detect that, and it will destroy that cell before an infection takes place. Very robust. The next cell that we want to talk about is called a dendritic cell. Now, the dendritic cell is kind of like an octopus. It actually has the ability to reach through that fence and grab the virus that's on the other side, on the outside of the fence, in the mucus, and it can chop that virus up into all of the proteins that make up that virus, all of them. And for the SARS-CoV-2 virus, for example, there are about 29 proteins. So it chops all of these into individual proteins, takes them back on the inside of the body. And they're harmless now. They're just proteins. And it's going to display these proteins to other cells of the immune system, specifically T cells, which recognize specific antigens, which are these proteins that are now inside of the body. And the dendritic cell is asking the T cells, do you recognize any part of this thing? And if the answer is yes, then these T cells now become cytotoxic or activated T cells. And now they're given the ability to do exactly what that natural killer cell was able to do. They can see or detect any cells that are on that epithelial barrier that contain these viruses and want to start making copies of the virus. They can see that, they will detect that, and they will destroy those cells that contain the viruses before they are released inside of the body. That is called true protection of infection. Now, you talked about autoimmunity. There's a very special communication that happens between the T cell, which actually detects these individual proteins. Now, it's critical to understand that the virus itself is never the antigen, never. The protein parts of it are. So the T cell is looking at all parts of this virus that has been chopped up, and it will communicate with B cells. The B cell is the one that actually makes the antibody. There is a very special communication and important communication that happens between the T cell and the B cell to make absolutely sure that that antibody that is created is not going to be one that's going to interact with similar proteins that are normally in the body. By doing so, if they do that, that's called autoimmunity, and that's a very bad thing. So the problem with this particular technology that they're using, Dr. Paul, they're injecting something inside of you that's stimulating your body to make billions and billions of these little spike proteins, which the immune system will, in fact, recognize. That's its job. And it's going to build antibodies against it. But the problem is there are so many of these spike proteins that are being produced that the B cells will start cranking out suboptimal, crappy antibodies immediately. And these are the ones, Dr. Paul, that result in autoimmune problems in people because they can start attacking proteins that are normally in the body. And this is not a good thing. We don't want that to happen.
No, we don't. So one of the hardest things to treat, those of you who are watching who've experienced autoimmunity in any way, it is so hard to treat because your immune system's confused and attacking yourself.
Very confused. And we don't want to be confusing the immune system. And that's exactly what this shot was designed to do, Dr. Paul. And it's not a vaccine. It does not fit the definition of a vaccine. You and I were talking earlier before the show started about traditional vaccines that actually contain the real parts of the real virus. And when you inject those into the body, it will immediately start antibody production. There is nothing in this mRNA technology that will do that. They use what's called lipid nanoparticle technology. And inside of these lipid nanoparticles are smaller lipid nanoparticles. Pfizer's uses something called ALC-315. And Moderna's use something called SM-102. These are the very, very tiny lipid particles that actually contain their proprietary messenger RNA. And the messenger RNA is the template for building what is supposed to be the spike protein. It's really not the original spike protein. It's something far, far different. We can talk about that later. But what I'm trying to convey here is there is a larger lipid nanoparticle that contains these smaller lipid nanoparticles. And the larger lipid nanoparticle is encapsulated in two normal body fats. One is cholesterol, and the other one has a really long name, but it's fun to say. It's diesterylphosphatidylcholine. These are normal body fats, and when you inject these, the body does not see that as an invader. It sees it as self. And so any cell, and I mean any cell, that these lipid nanoparticles run into, they will merge because the cell membranes are made of the same stuff. So now we've got the smaller lipid nanoparticles getting into body cells, that this should never be allowed to happen. Because that lipid nanoparticle is so small, it can cross that blood-brain barrier. And so now we've got spike proteins being made in the brain. We've also got spike proteins that can be made in red blood cells. This is not supposed to be happening. So these spike proteins that are actually toxic and dangerous and can cause all sorts of problems in your body are being made all over the place. This is not a good thing. They didn't think that through, Dr. Paul. All they wanted to do was make a protein that would stimulate antibody production. That's the goal of all of these shots. All they want to do is make the antibody. Now, where is the antibody? It's on the inside of you. It's called a serum antibody. It's on the inside of you. It can only react to the infection once it's already occurred. It's too late. It's there as a backup. It doesn't protect the infection, nor does it stop the spread. And that's the problem. So what they're doing is they're working on the wrong side of the fence. I'll talk about something else that's working on the wrong side of the fence. And this will really pique your interest. It's this ridiculous testing that we're doing, Dr. Paul. They're looking on the wrong side of the fence. They're looking in your snot and in your spit before the virus particle has gotten on the inside of you. That means nothing. As I said before, we all breathe 100 million various virus particles every single day, and they get stuck in that mucus. So if you look for them there, you will definitely find them there. It does not mean that you are sick or even will get sick. And the problem with this is they're detecting these virus particles in millions of people that are not sick. And what do? They send these people home and they say, you have to quarantine now because you're a threat to other people. This is destroying businesses and economies all over the world. And it's being done on purpose. And people need to wake up and see this. The only way that you can determine if a person is truly infected is to find the virus particle on the inside, not the outside. I hope that makes a little bit of sense.
That does make sense. Is anybody doing that, finding the virus particle on the inside?
I know that it's possible to do that, but it's expensive. And for, you know, the government to try to test everyone to see if the virus is on the inside, I think that that would be cost prohibitive.
Right.
So whether that's going to happen in mass, Dr. Paul, I seriously doubt it.
Yeah. So we have this phenomenon of this spike protein being produced in the gonads, in the endothelial lining. So you have problems with blood vessels, the heart, the myocarditis, brain, as you mentioned already. I imagine lung, any tissue really.
Any tissue at all is going to make the spike protein. And some, I'm sorry to interrupt, but some tissues are actually storing these lipid nanoparticles, particularly the testes and the ovaries. They're not necessarily making the spike protein, but the little lipid nanoparticles that I talked about, the ALC-315 in Pfizer and the SM-102 in Moderna, they are crossing that endothelial lining of your blood vessel in these ovary and testes, because that lining is very, very small. And they're crossing that lining and being absorbed directly into those tissues and just sitting there, and they are becoming toxic. And I think that's part of the problem. Now, over time, they may start developing spike proteins, and that's going to be another problem as well. But the spike protein production is a problem with myocarditis, especially after the second shot. And doctors like yourself, you've seen the charts, you've seen the signs. The escalation of myocarditis, even in children, is happening after that second shot. And there's a very specific reason for that, Dr. Paul, and it's called activation of what's called the complement cascade. The complement cascade or complement system is the heavy artillery of your immune system. And it's normally designed for very special occasions when the body is having a serious problem getting rid of a specific infection. And so the way the complement cascade works is this. You have about 15 quintillion proteins of 30 different varieties that are circulating in all fluids of your body at all times. This is called the complement system. And when it gets activated, it's literally like throwing one match into a box of matches. I mean, it takes off quickly. And what it does is it attracts numerous white blood cells to all cells of the body that are making spike proteins or have spike proteins attached. It wants to get rid of these things immediately. Now, why is that happening? Because after the first shot, your body will develop antibodies. That's what the body does. That's normal. It makes the antibodies and it makes the memory to remake those antibodies. But over time, those antibodies will go away. If we kept every antibody that we ever made, our blood would be sludge. We wouldn't even be able to move it through our body. So it is normal for these antibodies to wane over time. It's the memory to make the antibody that's important, and that does not go away. But what does Fauci want people to do? He's looking at your antibody titers after these shots. And he's saying, oh, these antibodies are going away after a few weeks, so we need to boost them. We need to get those antibodies back up so these people can be, quote, protected. And so when you get that second shot or booster shot, your cells in your body are going to make billions and billions of spike proteins all over again. And when the immune system sees this, it says, I've already dealt with this spike protein. I had antibodies against it, and I have the memory to make antibodies again and stop these spike proteins from being made. But now there are billions of them. Where are these things coming from? This is not normal. So I am going to turn on that complement cascade and I'm going to get rid of these spike proteins. This is hyperinflammatory, Dr. Paul, and it is going to cause significant tissue damage. And when it happens in the heart, this is called myocarditis. And this is happening even in children. And this is why you're seeing images of these pro athletes that are in the best shape of their life dropping on the field. And it's even happening to high school students and junior high school students on the basketball court. This is tragic. And it can be prevented simply by putting an end to this nonsense right now. So the myocarditis that happens in these children, it's permanent. And it can be deadly. And it's not something that the child or the athlete will normally have symptoms from, because it's not a plumbing issue. It's not clogging the arteries of your heart and giving you chest pains or angina. It's disrupting the normal flow of that electrical energy through your heart that keeps it beating in unison. And so what's going to happen is arrhythmias are going to be set up. And some of these can be quite deadly. And this is what's happening. I'm sad to say, 20% of children that get severe myocarditis after this shot are expected to die within 2 years, and half of them within 5 years. And the VRBPAC committee right now, the Vaccine and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee, and Paul Offit sits on this, if you know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
They are advising the FDA right now to extend the emergency use authorization to children 5 years old and higher. And tomorrow, they're going to talk about authorizing this for use in babies, Dr. Paul, from 6 months and upward. And I'm telling you right now, any one of those doctors that votes for this is guilty of willful misconduct, because they know this. And they're going to allow this to happen for what? Trying to prevent the symptoms of COVID in a child, which will not kill a child. This is crazy, Dr. Paul. It's totally insane. It needs to stop.
Agreed. Yeah, we'll come back to, we're going to come back to, man, I love your simple explanation. Folks, if you've been following this, this is the most clear layman's term. Thank you for this, by the way, description of how the immune system works. If we had the graphics, if I had that ability, we'd create graphics and this would be a winning movie, a documentary. I mean, amazing. I'd like to pivot just to give our audience a little break from all the science.
Okay.
I know you're going to get right back to science, though, but I'm interested in your career as a pilot. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I always wanted to be a pilot, Dr. Paul. Ever since I was 15 years old, that was my dream. That's what I wanted to be. And so my father was a chiropractor, and he and I actually learned to fly together, which was a fascinating experience. We got our instrument ratings on the same day. We got our multi-engine ratings on the same day. I mean, it was the ultimate father and son bonding experience. And so
that's amazing.
Yeah, you know, you know, he knew that I wanted to be a pilot, but he also wanted me to be a chiropractor. And so I ended up doing both. I went to chiropractic school. I taught flying while I was going through college. And then after I got out and started practicing, I was hanging out at the airport, with my flying buddies almost as much as being in the office. And over time, I just gradually spent more time at the airport. And for me personally, I was having more fun in airplanes than I was being in the office. Now, for people like you, Dr. Paul, I've watched you interact with children. And I mean, for you, that's where you get your joy. And for me, it was in airplanes. And so I just kind of leaned in that direction. But I've always been fascinated with chiropractic philosophy, and I've enjoyed teaching it and explaining to people how the immune system actually works. And so I've continued in that direction.
Yeah.
Now, when I got into, you know, being an actual airline pilot,
what year was that?
Well, it was 1987 is when I actually started flying for an airline. And back then it was Eastern Airlines, and then they went out of business. There was a major strike. I did not cross the picket line. I was out of work for a while as a pilot and went back into practice for a little while. And then I went to another airline that was called Calm Air. That was a Delta connector. And then from Calm Air, I moved on to Northwest Airlines. And then Northwest Airlines merged with Delta Airlines. And so that's where I ended my career. Early, by the way, I was forced to retire early, Dr. Paul, 2 years early, because I absolutely refused to wear that face mask as part of my uniform. And I got into a major argument with upper management about this. I explained to them the dangers of wearing a mask, how it could affect a pilot's ability to think properly if they wore this mask for prolonged periods. And I also warned them about the dangers of forcing people to wear these masks. You're literally, what you're doing is you're practicing medicine without a license, because you're putting a medical device, something that actually restricts airflow, onto passengers and putting them in an aluminum tube that's flying at an altitude of 39,000 feet, where the cabin altitude is anywhere from 5,000 to 8,000 feet, depending upon how old the aircraft is and how tight the airframe is. So you're putting a hypoxic condition on top of a hypoxic condition. Some of these people should never have that happen to them, especially those with COPD and emphysema. And are they checking for anything like that, Dr. Paul? Of course not. They're just saying everyone has to wear the mask to, quote, protect your neighbor, which is ridiculous. The mask doesn't stop the transmission of viruses. They were never designed to do that. And so when I got all upset about this and talking to management, they said, well, we see that you have a medical background, and we actually agree with you that we know that the masks will not stop the transmission of a disease, but corporate has decided that it's a matter of optics. We feel that the passengers would feel safer if they saw all of our employees wearing the same type of face mask. And I said, well, I'm not dealing. And so they said, well, you can't work here anymore. So they had an early retirement program. So I took that, I put my line in the sand, and that was it. So it was an expensive decision that I made for myself, but that's just how I felt about it.
Yeah. No, you stood your ground, and that's important. I was flying to a conference where I was speaking, and I forget which airport I was in because I've been in so many, but the board just lit up with cancellations, and they were all one airline.
Yeah.
And they tried to blame it on the weather, but the weather was fine.
Okay.
What's going on?
Here's what happened, Dr. Paul. I took early retirement, and a lot of other pilots did too. And the reason that happened is the airlines overreacted. They did not think that the flying public would come back as fast as they did. And so now, because of that, they're understaffed. Okay. Some of these pilots also are having physical problems from the shot. They're developing myocarditis issues, and they're unable to pass their physical that they have to get twice a year, by the way, two times a year. And one of the things they have to jump through is an EKG. So the EKG is picking up some of these irregularities. So some pilots are not able to pass the physical. So that has depleted the amount of qualified pilots that are available. And so when that happens, what they do is they incentivize pilots. They pay them a lot of extra money to come to work on their days off. But there's a little caveat there, because a pilot can only fly so many hours in a year. And some pilots are running up against these limitations. There's also monthly limitations. So usually towards the end of a month is when you'll start to see some of these cancellations happening, because they've just basically run out of pilots. And you're also going to see it happen towards the end of this year too, Dr. Paul, right around Thanksgiving and Christmas time is my prediction of when you're going to see a lot of cancellations happen, a lot of them. And so what they've done is they've actually dropped the requirements for a person to become a pilot now. It used to be you had to have many years of education, a higher degree, and lots of hours. And they've dropped all of those requirements now, because they just need to train these pilots to get them on board to keep up with the demands of the traveling public. And so you were asking me about what should the FAA be doing right now?
Yeah. What should they do to keep the public safe?
Yeah, that's their job, Dr. Paul. Now, they can react in two different ways. Now, one way is called reactionary. Anytime you see something really bad happen with an airline accident, the FAA will put mandates in place to prevent that from happening again. A really good example of that was back in 1985. There was a Delta L-1011 wide-body aircraft on final approach to the Dallas-Fort Worth airport, and it ran into wind shear, and that slammed that airplane into the ground, and almost 200 people died. And the FAA said, well, we've got to put some wind shear detection equipment around airports, and we've also got to figure out a way to put wind shear detection equipment on the aircraft as well. That way, we've got a two-pronged look at this, and we can avoid wind shear. And in fact, they have done that, and it has been successful, and we haven't had a significant wind shear incident ever since that time. Another way the FAA reacts is called preventionary. An example of that was several years ago, they changed the age, the retirement age of a pilot from 60 to 65. But when they did that, they said, now, wait a minute here. We don't have any safety data on pilots over the age of 60 being in command of a large aircraft with lots of people. So we're going to put a mandate that says no two pilots over the age of 60 can be in command of the aircraft at the same time. And they did that, and they watched that for 7 years, Dr. Paul, 7 years to make sure that there were no safety signals. And when they decided there were none, then they said, all right, it's okay to have two older pilots in command of the aircraft at the same time. Now, what did they do with this shot, which is not FDA approved? They broke rules on so many levels, Dr. Paul. I am appalled at what the FAA has done here. In fact, the FAA administrator resigned over this, and they're kind of in a state of limbo right now. It's a presidential appointed position, and so they're waiting for Joe Biden to, you know, appoint the next guy right now. So they don't know what to do right now, but I'm telling them what they need to do. They need to take a preventive measure on this and not wait for something disastrous to happen and react to it. And so what they've got to do is, number one, they have to stop putting these shots into flight crews immediately. Because number one, none of these shots are FDA approved. None of them. Two of them say they are. One is called Comirnaty by Pfizer, and the other is called Spikevax from Moderna. But neither one of these products are even available. So what they're injecting into these flight crews is totally experimental. That is not legal. You cannot do that. Plus, it's not even a vaccine, as we already talked about. It's a drug. A vaccine is supposed to have something in it that will immediately result in an antibody production from something that's in the shot. These don't have that. This is a different technology, and therefore it's a drug. And now for drugs, Dr. Paul, a pilot cannot take a drug even after it has been approved for a full year. And the reason is because the flight surgeons at the FAA are looking for any adverse reactions that are happening in the general public, because they can take these drugs now. They're looking for any reactions in the general public that might affect safety of flight. And so what did they do with this shot called a vaccine? 2 days after it got emergency use authorization, 2 days, the FAA made a statement. We recommend all commercial airline pilots go out and get this procedure. Yeah, you're shaking your head. Me too.
The thing is, it's nice that the FAA had that prior approach to things that sounded so wise, and they just threw it all out.
Yeah.
In the case of COVID, because of all this nonsense.
It's fear, Dr. Yeah. Paul. They had these images of people dropping dead in China, which never happened. You know, a virus takes time to infect the body. And indeed, it will make some people sick. Some people did get sick. I admit that. But it's people that have the severe immunosuppression. And maybe some people that have genetic predispositions to this problem. That's a whole nother rabbit hole that we could jump down if you want to get into that one. But there's something also going on with genetic predisposition.
Sure. Always. Absolutely. While we're on fear, because I actually am not completely immune to it. I'm not afraid of the virus. Don't get me wrong. No, I woke up this morning. I'm afraid of the stupid medical board that's about to yank my license because I speak out and because I publish that data and because, right. And I had to just center myself and, you know, breathe in love and exhale fear. And within a short while, I was better. But for our public, I mean, this massive amount of fear that's become a part of our lives. What's your suggestion?
Well, number one, people have to realize that this is a war, and it doesn't make any difference how you feel about the shot, whether you think it's a good idea or not. It has to be evident to everyone at this point that your freedoms are at stake. The WHO right now is trying to form treaties with 194 countries all over the world, and the United States is one of them, so that they can determine with lockstep compliance what the reaction will be to the next pandemic. And there will be one. because they changed the definition of a pandemic. All a pandemic means is that a disease crosses borders. That's all it means. It doesn't even have to be a deadly pandemic. It can be any pandemic. And so they get to determine if these countries have signed on with this treaty, what the reaction will be. And what they're trying to do, Dr. Paul, is implement the vaccine passport so that they can control every part of your life, where you go. This could be disastrous. Now, people, if you think having that mask, that muzzle, like a dog on your face was bad, just wait until you feel the pull of the vaccine leash they want to pull around, they want to put around you. This is not good. This is what they're trying to do, and we need to stop that. Now, how do we stop it? Number one, when you go to a war, you got to have a weapon. And so our weapon is going to be peaceful non-compliance. We just have the courage to stand up and say, no, I am not going to put that mask on. I am not going to close my business. I am not going to put a sign on my door that says you have to wear this thing to get into my business. You can wear one if you want to, but you don't have to. Okay? So peaceful non-compliance on all levels, including this ridiculous testing that they're having people do, which you and I already discussed. It means absolutely nothing. Shoving a stick up your nose to prove if you have or don't have something stuck in your snot means absolutely nothing. So we have to stop complying with this nonsense. And so the second thing you have to have is armor. And I believe that the armor in this war is going to be the truth and knowledge of how your immune system actually works and can prevent you from becoming infected by anything, even these man-made weapons. And when you understand this, you will lose your fear, which is how they are controlling you.
Yep.
That's how we do it, Dr. Paul.
Okay. So now I'm a nuts and bolts guy, so I'm going to put you on the spot. I didn't warn you about this, but I bet you can pull it off. We've just shared that a robust, healthy immune system is key.
Yes.
And that's why I'm not fearful. I mean, I wouldn't probably choose to just hang out with somebody who is really, really sick with COVID just because, I don't know, I don't want that dose. I don't need to challenge my immune system that right. much. But on the other hand, I'm not afraid to go anywhere without a mask because I know my immune system is probably more than good enough.
Right.
I've traveled all over the place and it's been fine. But there are people who, like you, have not had a vaccine. You know your innate immune system's really robust.
Yes.
There are people like me who've had some vaccines before we woke up and then we kind of realized, no, I'm not doing that anymore. But I probably have some handicaps to my immune system as a result of that. And then there are people who are highly vaccinated. I know there's a large percentage of our country and our world who've had one or two of the COVID jabs and now kind of regret it, or at least they are unwilling to get any boosters. So these are all people who need to do whatever they can to have a robust immune system. What would you recommend people do?
Number one, eat healthy. Get proper nutrition. Try to eat as much food that you can get that says organic on it. There's a significant problem with eating foods that have been contaminated with glyphosate or Roundup. And this kind of gets a little down into the weeds, but all of these foods have been genetically modified so that they can survive the glyphosate. But by doing so, it's disrupted the ability in some of these plants to make what are called essential amino acids that our body needs, Dr. Paul. They're called essential because our bodies don't make these amino acids. We need to eat these amino acids in the plants. And so what's happening is people are malnourished. People walking down the street, Dr. Paul, that look like they're perfectly healthy, they can be almost as malnourished as these starving images that you see of children in Africa. because they're lacking the ability to get these essential amino acids to make the proteins that our body needs to have normal function. And so you need to try to eat as much organic foods as you possibly can. Another thing you need to do is get out into the sunshine or supplement your vitamin D, because vitamin D is not really a vitamin, it's a hormone. There are receptors on almost all cells of your body for vitamin D to get in. It is that important. And it's easy to have your vitamin D levels checked. It should be above 50 nanograms per mole or something like that. I can't remember the exact way to say that, but
I think it's nanograms per milliliter.
Yeah, whatever that is, it's easy to check. So if you don't have that level, you should supplement it with either increasing your nutrition or taking supplements. Vitamin C also. Another thing that's critical is exercise. We need to keep our bodies moving all the time. Otherwise, it's going to stagnate and start to degenerate. And you know, for people that say, well, I don't have the time to exercise, you can exercise at your desk. If you just take 30 seconds and put your arms above your head quickly up and down 30 times, that will get your heart rate up. We need to get fresh, oxygen-filled, nutrient-filled blood to all cells of the body so that we can not only have those nutrients get into those cells, but have toxins eliminated. And by doing that, that will increase your health as well. So these are just basic steps that people need to recognize that they can do. Another important supplement to have is zinc. And we're just learning about how important zinc is in the cells of the body, because it actually stops that viral replication from happening. But in order to get that zinc in there, you need what's called an ionophore. And the best one is something called quercetin that you can still buy at a health food store. And if you're not a big supplement taker, then you want to eat a lot of foods that are high in polyphenols, because quercetin is a polyphenol. So the foods that are very colorful, like blueberries, things like that, very dark colored vegetables, these all have high polyphenols in it. So anything like that you can do, get away from the junk foods. Try to get yourself off of pharmaceuticals. Try to find a doctor like yourself who is interested in what's called preventive medicine. You're more interested in helping people stay healthy than you are in waiting for a disease process to show up so that it can be treated. So this is kind of a new way of thinking. People have to get on board with that. I need to build up my immune system. I need to do whatever I can to stay healthy and not wait for myself to get sick.
Yep. Dr. Stillwagon, thank you so much. Folks, you just heard the basics of being healthy outlined for you. It's simple, but it's not easy. But make one change right now. Make a commitment to one change and then re-listen to that little segment over and over until you've implemented every single thing he suggested, because your health, your life depends upon it. I want to give you an opportunity to have closing words. What do you think is the most important thing we as a society, as a world, as individuals, we need to do?
I think we need to understand that these virus particles that we're talking about are part of the ecosystem. They're designed to be there for a reason, Dr. Paul. We actually, that's how we communicate with our environment. Man has a way of poisoning the environment. We throw things out there that our bodies just don't know how to handle. And the way that our creator overcomes this problem in humans is to have the ability to create new proteins. Where is that information? It's in these virus particles that we transmit between us all the time. We have to realize that this is nature. This is part of how the world was designed to work. We need to learn to live in harmony with these things, not try to destroy them. Trying to destroy these things is going to be the end of humanity. We live in a sea of viruses. There are 10 to the 31 in the breathable air around this planet. That's more than the stars in the universe. There are that many more in the dirt that you're walking on, that many more in the oceans around the planet. There are 380 trillion of them on you and in you right now. And without them, you will not be able to survive. We need to understand that they're part of nature, part of us. Don't treat them as the enemy. Learn how to live in harmony with these things and understand that, yes, sometimes people are going to get sick. They're going to have an illness. But all of these illnesses, Dr. Paul, there are treatments available. So let's concentrate on building up the immune system so that we don't get sick. And then when we do get sick, let's do some treatments that make sense. Let's not be injecting something into our bodies as a backup, waiting for you to get sick. And by doing so, actually destroying the real protection of infection. And that's exactly what these shots are doing. We need to stop that.
There you have it, folks. Kevin, wow. What a privilege and honor it's been to have you on the show today.
My pleasure to be here, Dr. Paul. I absolutely love talking with people like you that understand this. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, thank you.
Dr. Paul, thanks for watching the show. Please visit doctorsandscience.com. There you can access our members-only section. This show is member-supported. We don't have to take sponsors. We don't have to have anybody controlling the content of our show. This is a huge perk most people aren't aware of. Your membership gives you access to my ebooks, transcripts of every show, PowerPoints from talks I'm giving around the country, and live bonus peeks at behind-the-scenes work we're doing, my off-the-cuff thoughts and reviews on current events. Your support makes all this possible. Thank you.
Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.